Yippee-ki-yay, Mr. Falcon.
Bonus content.
So I achieved something today.
Oh, word!
I made it to the end of Dune.
Dune,
the new one, from beginning to end.
The first.
Yeah, Dune one.
Dune movie from Denis Villeneuve.
Villeneuve.
Oh, congratulations, Villeneuve. Man! What did you think?
It took me several tries and several real nerdy information dump sessions with our friend Kevin to be able to understand it, but I think I get it.
Oh, yeah?
I think I get it.
Cool. you needed the cliff notes.
Man, I'll tell you, it must be awesome for people who've read the books, but if you haven't read the books, that the old one from the 80s was way worse, but
oh god,
it's still tough to understand.
Well, yeah, it's they tell you nothing in the way of like exposition. Like the stuff just happens, and if you don't know the names and the different groups of people and all like the made up words people that are in that book, you're just lost.
Like they make some effort to at least name drop societies and huge groups of people and shit, but yeah, unless you're looking stuff up, you don't know what any of it means. Like, it's just so... So I haven't read any of the books yet.
Oh, I've read them. I've read eight of the books from the main story. Right. Oh, it's a lot.
So I guess what I kind of want to know is the material really that dense? Like, is there really that much that... I mean, David Lynch tried to do something insane. You said it's like three books worth of material in one movie, right?
Well, no, I mean the David Lynch one is just book one, but that book is a tome. It's long and there's a ton of stuff in there, and it sets up an 8-volume story arc. So there's just a ton of world building and background, and I think the whole Dune story encompasses something like 150,000 years. It's some insane time scale. It's crazy.
Right. But when the original book came out, there was no supplemental material. People had to have been able... They must have been able to understand the original novel.
Oh, yeah.
On its own, right? So, I mean, is there that much in the first book that it's so...
There's a lot.
...hard to jam it into a movie?
Yeah.
Or even in a 3-movie series?
Yes, there's a lot. So... Denis Villeneuve's trilogy is going to be books 1 and 2. So Dune 1 and Dune 2 are basically book 1. And then book 2 is Dune Messiah. That's going to be movie 3 of the trilogy. But like, yeah, there's so much shit in book 1. You have to split it up. Because David Lynch tried to cram it in. And like, you know, that movie just moves a million miles an hour. And
it's so weird.
It's a lot.
I watched that recently too. And again, the first time I made it through that whole fucking thing, conscious. And it's kind of okay. Like, I can keep up with it until Paul runs away to the desert.
Yeah.
And from there on, it just gets fucking crazy. It's just, like I said, you know, there's this blue-eyed kid with this weird voice shows up. You're not really sure where she came from.
Do you know where she came from?
I forget. I think I kind of caught it in the first in the movie.
You want me to tell you?
Yeah, sure. Go ahead, tell me. Drop some dunage on me.
Yeah, we're going to enter the Duneverse.
This is how I understand these movies and the story, is through the nerd expoundings of my friends. This is good.
Yeah. We're here for you, man.
Who's the blue-eyed chick?
The blue-eyed kid's name is Alia. It's Paul Atreides, the main character it's his younger sister. And she's
full sister or half sister?
Full sister. So he's the son of Duke Leto Atreides and the Bene Gesserit witch, for lack of a better word. Her name's Lady Jessica. So
he's Rose the Hat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's their son, and presumably before everything starts, she conceives with Duke Leto another child, and she gets chosen to become like what's called a reverend mother or a revered mother for the Fremen, and they go through this ritual where they drink this shit called the Water of Life, and it's essentially poison. But the Bene Gesserit have this way to, like, they can, like, identify everything that's happening in their body while the poison's happening. And when it does that, it allows them to absorb all the memories of the previous Reverend Mother.
And that was in the Lynch movie.
Yeah.
So that was in there.
The problem is she's pregnant while she goes through this ritual. So while she's becoming, like, awakened and basically downloads the past experience of every mother that came before her, so too does her daughter in the womb. Her daughter basically comes to full, complete consciousness in the womb. So when she talks to her telepathically from the womb. So when she's born, she's basically...
This is after she had Paul, she gets pregnant with the girl?
After she has Paul. Right before the events of the book and the movie take off, she becomes pregnant. So,
gotcha.
Yeah, and goes through this thing, this ritual, and basically awakens her unborn daughter to full.
Now, was this
Jedi.
An accident?
It was kind of. Yeah, they didn't know she was pregnant when they did the ritual, and they all kind of recoil in horror at like the idea of what they've done, because they understand
Claudia, an Interview with the Vampire.
Yeah, kind of. Yeah, just kind of like verboten.
First thing I thought of. That's neat.
They didn't know.
Okay. Yeah, I didn't understand any of that from the fucking David Lynch movie. I didn't get any of that. I got the life juice, but...
Yeah. Life juice, yeah. She's seen as like an abomination, you know, by everyone around her. But because she's like this little kid, but like she's got like 1,000 lifetimes worth of knowledge in her head.
So they squirrel her away somewhere for a few years?
Sort of. I think she also grows at a rapid rate. And in the book, the passage of time, things kind of take a longer in the book and in the first movie than they do. Things move along pretty rapidly in like the new one. So yeah, she has time to be born and grow up a little bit.
Now, when we're recording this second Villeneuve Dune movie just is in theaters. I haven't seen it yet. You have.
Yeah.
What is it? Aaliyah? Is that the sister's name?
Aaliyah. I mean, I'm not exactly sure how to say it, but that's one of easier names in that book.
Does she show up at the end of Dune 2?
You want me to spoil it for you?
Well, yeah, I'm going to see it anyway.
Yeah. All right, sure. Like, yeah, you see, like, basically her in the womb as that ritual's taking place, and like you see almost like you see her like in the womb and her eyes open and they're like dune blue.
And that's creepy.
Yeah, it is. It's cool. It's creepy, but it looks really cool. And then you see her as all grown up in one of Paul's visions of the future, and she's like was a super secret cast in terms of she's played by Anya Taylor-Joy. Who was not part of any of
the
pre-release marketing. She's not in any of the marketing material. So she was kind of a secret cast.
Neat. Okay.
Yeah,
well,
man.
This is the real reason I was asking you about this.
Okay.
So after all these years, I mean, I remember nerd people who were friends of mine talking
nerd
about
people.
Dune. Yeah, nerd people. When I was a kid, you know, our whole life, people have been talking about Dune. Old nerds were talking about Dune. There were the 70, you know, the David Lynch movie has its fans, as weird and, you know, smashed as it is. I assume if you read the books, you get a lot out of it still. And there was a miniseries in 2000.
That I have not seen.
I haven't either, but I found it. But so the book was very popular, clearly enough to spawn a whole series of novels. Huge world building. They've been trying to adapt it to screens, big and small, for decades. What is it about this story of sandworms and weird names and shit? Like, what is it that captures the imagination? Like, this one passed me by, so I didn't catch this one. But who's to say if I hadn't been introduced to it younger, I probably would have. It's pretty engrossing. I mean, I kind of get it, but I want to hear from someone who knows that much about it. What is it? And because, I mean, the second one's doing huge. People are going crazy for this shit in the theater now. It's bigger than anyone ever thought. And it's this, like, ultra nerdy thing for so long that was so niche.
Yeah.
So what is it? What is it about this story that helps it endure and has let it be this popular now?
Well, I think time is a flat circle. and I say that because Dune comes out and inspires a bunch of people, like writers.
You mean the novel?
The novel, yeah.
Comes out.
Dune comes out in 1965, Frank Herbert. And people go nuts for it. And the movie came out in like 1980, I think.
I mean, put it in context, I always try to remember this when I talk about, read about things that happened in the 60s, especially in relation to sci-fi and whatnot. That's 4 years before we got to the moon.
Right.
Like,
yeah.
You know, we are in baby shoes land. Like, the amount of the imagination to create this world, this was really far out shit in 65.
Yeah. And which is why it has a lot more in common with fantasy than it does with sci-fi.
And it makes the spice thing make more sense.
Yeah. So
65.
But Dune comes out in 65. And people read it, they go nuts. The movie comes out in 80, but something happens in between that time, and it's called Star Wars. And Star Wars borrows very heavily from Dune, way more heavily than people, I think, even realize. Look at where Luke Skywalker lives. He lives on Tatooine, which is basically a giant desert planet. There's nothing there. Right. People have to farm moisture. There's a group of, like, supernatural priests with mind powers called the Jedi, which, if you're watching Dune or reading Dune, sound a lot like the Order of Women called the Bene Gesserit.
And yeah, they just made them celibate dudes instead.
Yeah, and instead of using the Jedi mind trick, they have the voice. They're like, silence, and you just hear it like in your brain, and you're compelled to just do whatever they say. It's the Jedi.
It's kind of similar, huh?
It's the Jedi mind trick. And like the sandworms, like they allude to that kind of stuff in Star Wars, you know, like, just remember the Sarlacc pit.
I was just going to say the Sarlacc pit with the teeth.
Yeah, man, look familiar.
Before they added the stupid fucking beak in the special edition.
Exactly.
The CG beak. It really did look like the sandworm maw, especially in the new one when it swallows the spice harvester thing.
Yeah.
That was the first, when it comes up from the bottom, I'm like, oh, that looks like a giant Sarlacc pit.
That shit looked amazing, by the way.
Oh, yeah. The effects are really good. I assume the second one's the same.
Dude, the first one's really, really good. The second one was no less than, like, one of the best experiences in a movie theater I've ever had. It was just overwhelming. Wow. It was so good. Now, I'm one of those nerd people that you alluded to earlier. I eat that shit up. But my God.
Like, you saw it in IMAX too, right?
Yeah, my sister saw it first and was so blown away by it. She called me. She's like, Tom, you have to see this with me. I'm taking you. You need to experience this. I want to be next to you when you do. Like, that's how strongly she felt about it. And yeah, and she was right, man. It delivered on every level. And to answer your question, like, why do people, you know, relate to it so much? I think because Star Wars borrowed so much from it, and then Star Wars blew up, it was kind of like gave it more momentum when people started to find out where some of the things that inspired Star Wars came from. And, you know, there was the David Lynch movie, which was made way too soon. Like, there's no way they could make that movie in 1980 and pull it off with what they tried to film. So then fast forward, you finally have a capable director to do it who loves the source material, and, like, they have the tools to do it. And the end result is nothing less than, like, you know, like I said, mind-blowing. And then the other thing, too, is that it doesn't feel very sciencey, even though it's science fiction. It, the way it reads and the things that drive the plot are very like mystic and religious in nature.
Like, yeah, that, that's something that really did strike me. And like I said, Kevin explained a lot to me about how this whole thing works. And from what I gather, the whole idea is that as a society, they spurned unnecessary technology long ago, right?
There was like an AI war.
Right, and like before SPICE was discovered, computers used to chart courses for spaceships, right?
Yeah, so in order to travel between galaxies, they had like AI computers do it. And then there was this thing called the Butlerian Butlerian Jihad. It was a huge
Butlerian.
Yeah. This huge war against the machines. But, sound familiar? Humanity rises up to defeat the machines. And they win, but they outlaw any computer capable of like high functioning thought. And so it gives rise to this whole group of people. There's two groups. There's the Mentats, which are basically human computers. And then there's the Guild Navigators, which consume the spice, which is this psychoactive drug.
I got to give David Lynch credit.
Oh,
he
God.
He had the balls to put one of the Navigators in his movie, and it did not look that bad. It looks like a weird, like pulsating brain ball sack, but
that's how it was written.
That's kind of what they look like. Yeah,
that's exactly how it was described.
That thing, in the tank in that movie, that was pretty cool. I got to give them credit. That and the sandworms did not look that bad.
No, they looked
good. 1980.
They did not.
There was a couple, like when they had to do the green screen work, when they had characters in front of it, it looked a little iffy, and the scale was fucked up, but. Generally, especially like it was 1980, Jesus Christ, man. The only thing that looks so terrible in that movie is the shield.
Oh, the shields look awful.
It's horrifying. It's a joke. And but hey, it had Jean-Luc Picard in it.
Yeah, Gurney Halleck.
So what you're saying essentially is that because Star Wars ripped off so much from Dune, it put the pieces that Dune is made of into the social consciousness because Star Wars is so fucking pervasive.
Yeah.
And I guess today, now that these movies have come out in such a, not digestible, but fun, not, you know what I mean? They're in good movies. Like you said, they're with the right budgets, with the right effects, with the right talent behind them. So people are used to this story. And so even with the minimal exposition that they have, people dig it because they kind of already get the story because they know it so well.
Yeah, and I'm kind of like an example of that, like in that I was first things first, I was a kid in the 80s. I grew up with Star Wars. I loved it.
Yeah,
I loved it. I thought it was amazing.
Same.
I got obsessed with it. And then
that's the original trilogy before the special edition and the CG fixes and everything, you know.
And since that, I have just been steadily burned by the diminishing returns of the Star Wars franchise. It's just gotten worse and worse and worse. And so somewhere in there, I hear about Dune. I read it, and I'm like, oh, I see where a lot of this came from. And then, like, right as I'm at a point to just give up on Star Wars, Dune comes out, and they crush it. And, like, it's like everything I've wanted out of Star Wars I'm now getting from Dune. And it's not like I'm older now too. Like I don't just want, you know, lightsaber battles, you know, from start to finish. You get this really deep, compelling story that doesn't have a lot to do with like technology and science fiction. It's like the story of a religious icon and the power of like belief, and it's amazing.
And that difference is a big deal because so many things have bitten off of Star Wars in so many ways, not just plot-wise, but just look and the presence of technology and all that stuff. The Dune movies seem to have a very different feel.
Well, you look at where they are.
Different atmosphere, you know.
They're on Arrakis. They're just on this desert planet where they have nothing.
They're not in some big city. They're not in any hub of transportation or anything. They're in the backwater of the universe that's full of diamonds. Essentially, no, it's a neat setup. It is refreshing, and it's cool that it's doing so well. I'm glad. I'm really glad because, I mean, if you're going to remake something that needs to be remade.
That one desperately needed a remake.
Cool.
And not to sound like a total dweeb, but I'm going to say it. That just seeing Dune 2 after reading all the books and after having the table set by part one, part two is like, oh God, they really lean into the religious aspect of it. And there are parts of it that just like, they're like overwhelming. They're just so emotional and like you really feel something. It's
well, Timothy, a lot of the themes from what I can tell in Dune, some of them are really Jesus related. There's a lot of savior messiah stuff.
Well, yeah, and there's a
and, you know, not to say other religions don't have that same concept. A lot of them do, but
there's another like bent to it though. Like there's the Bene Gesserit, which have this program they call the Missionaria Protectiva, and they go to all these like planets that where they see potential to do this, and they seed little like bits of prophecy foretelling someone that might come, so that like the sisters, if they ever find themselves like stranded somewhere, are aware of all these like prophecies that they've seeded in these primitive planets, and they can use it to their advantage to like get ahead. But also, like, bend, things to match whatever the prophecy is. And there's, like, this galaxy-wide manipulation going on, which sounds a lot like another group of people, like, the Vatican, maybe.
Missionaries.
It's crazy. There's so much going on.
Bene Jesuits. That's what it sounds like to me.
That's very, very intentional. I'll say this, though, man. I read Lord of the Rings. Tolkien, right? Tolkien was a linguist. He was really, really, really good at coming up with names of fictional places that had a flavor for what they're supposed to be, like elvish, a human, dwarvish, but were just like, they made sense.
Hobbit, it's a good word.
Hobbit's a great word. You don't even question it. But then you get the Frank Herbert, who had to make up a bunch of shit, but he was no linguist. And so you get stuff like the Kwisatz-Haderach and the Bene Gesserit and the names.
Yeah, dude.
Oh, God.
I'm reading some of these names. I'm like, is this, did he speak Russian? Like, was he Polish and spoke Yiddish? Like, where the fuck did he get some of this stuff?
Some of the names are dreadful.
There's X's and three consonants. I'm like, what the fuck are you doing to us, bro?
Yo, there's one group of people.
And then you name some motherfucker
Duncan Guido.
Man, fuck you. You got a Kwasinski Kwasali and with a fucking apostrophe in the middle, and then you got Duncan fucking Idaho.
Yeah. It's like
fuck you, Frank.
It sounds like something he just put in there as a placeholder and forgot to take out. It was like 3 a.m. He's like, oh fuck, I need a name for this guy.
I thought they added that just for the new movie when they had Jason Momoa in there, and then I found out that goes all the way into the book. I'm like, oh my God,
dude. I just told you, this whole story is like takes place over like 135,000 years. Duncan Idaho is in every single book.
What? How? I saw him die.
Listen, one day.
It's not possible.
I don't know if we have time. Right. One day, I will explain to you the entire 135,000 story arc.
Oh, good. Good. And that'll be fun.
Get ready. It's fucking crazy. And I don't mean like just, Dave, it's insane. It's absolute. You're watching Frank Herbert go crazy on the page. It's hilarious.
No, well, I got to say, this must be a much better feeling being a fan of the books and seeing it treated so well on the screen. I know what it feels like on the other end of that.
Oh, me too, man.
I mean, I was a huge fan of the Dark Tower novels.
Ooh.
Stephen King. Yeah. That was not a good time. I went and saw that in the theater. My wife, who is also a huge fan of those books, and we just kind of left the theater and didn't talk.
That was another right home. 8-book slog, right?
Seven technically. Books. And then there's a novella and some other shit floating around that's part of it. But yeah, 7 books that are, they get like increasingly long. Like the last, the 7th book is a fuck, like you said, Dune's a tome. This fucking thing is a doorstop. Like it's almost as long as it. I think it's like almost nine. I think it's 900 pages, in hardback. And yeah, they tried to consolidate that into one 90-minute film. All that.
Yeah, seven no books. Way.
And he wrote it over God, I forget how many decades. It was a real slap in the face. I mean, I don't know what I expected from it. I tried not to read much about it until I went to see it. But yeah, it was so fucking terrible. That's why it's good to see all these Dune fans, especially long-timers, getting to see the movies, but getting to see it being so widely accepted. It's neat. It's cool.
It is, yeah. Like you,
and it's something you nailed something it. That isn't Star Wars, man. Something that isn't some property that's been done to death. I'm so sick of seeing all this shit. Like you said, Star Wars. I'm Star Wars'd out, brah. I'm done.
Dune I'm is Marvel'd the answer. Out.
Like I mildly am interested in this Deadpool Wolverine movie, just for the fucking novelty of it. But
yeah,
I don't care.
I'm telling you, man. Dune is like everything I've wanted out of Star Wars. It's finally happening. It's just not Star Wars. It's
there's no lightsabers. There's no lightsabers.
Yeah, you know what? You got a fucking Chris knife. The tooth of Shai Hulud, the maker.
I don't know what any of that means. I don't want to know what that means.
I'll explain it all. That's another night, though.